With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Well, Renee, it's early in the morning for you. You're awake. You're still on London time. I haven't seen you on this side of 8 o'clock often.
Listen, Caitlin, there's something that I love about jet lag, and that is getting up early in the morning. I like it. Although, I'm still struggling to get up. I mean, let's be honest. I'm not a morning person, okay? I'm a night person. I don't have a kid. You have a kid, so...
I have to say, every tennis player... pro I've ever met, and I'm sure there's exceptions to this because you'd like to tell me things like Steffi Graf requests a practice court at like 7 in the morning.
Yeah.
But are most tennis players night owls?
I would say so, yeah. I think a lot of it has to do with the fact that they play often at night sometimes, or, you know, they've been, you know, playing and practicing and their days are long and sort of, and then they get, you know, at night they want to just switch off and watch Netflix or whatever. It depends on the tournament, obviously. If you got to get up early, then that's a whole different story. But I would say most tennis players are night owls. They're young. Isn't every young person like hate getting up early in the morning?
Yeah, I think that's mostly true.
Lisa Raymond loved to hear that. She was always up at like the crack. So there are exceptions to the rule, but they're a rarity.
Well, what did Steffi Graf do when she had to play like a night match? Do you just schedule your sleeping so that you're...
She would, schedule her sleeping around that. But overall... Yeah, Steffi just liked to hit early in the morning. I mean, literally loved to hit at 7 o'clock in the morning. And I was like, okay. Yeah, that was a lot of fun. I had to like warm up with her. So
yeah, anyway. I'm sure that's a pretty full on experience, the Steffi Graf warm up.
Yeah, it's pretty full on.
Yeah.
Yeah, you had to be ready on the literally first ball. There's no like pity patter around for like 5 minutes. Like I see a lot of these, actually most players now, they go up and they do the short court tennis. Like I don't think Steffi ever had a short course tennis rally in her life. It was like, let's go, first ball, boom. So yeah, it was but hey, listen, I'm not gonna complain. Got to hit with the, you know, arguably one of the greatest players of all time. So anyway, I guess that's what made her good.
I guess so.
Yeah.
Makes sense. All right, so it's a couple of days after Wimbledon. Now we've had a chance to listen to other pods, see the reactions, get the feedback. And as you noted, somebody like Ash Barty, who's made history as the second Australian to win a Wimbledon.
Are you crazy?
Is that true? No, after Yvonne Gouldman.
Third now. Come on. Margaret Court, Yvonne.
Ah, I don't count Margaret.
You don't count Margaret? No. But unfortunately, we have to count Margaret.
Yeah.
And Yvonne Goolagong-Coley, which is, you know, the memory that I have as a kid is watching Yvonne win her second Wimbledon title. Obviously, I was born the year that she won her first Wimbledon title. In 71 some 50 and now subsequently 50 years after Yvonne won her first, Ash wins her first Wimbledon title. And kind of ironic, right? Fila did this, you know, specific dress for her to honor the 50th anniversary of Yvonne, and they specifically sort of put some lace in the dress, which is what Yvonne wore when she won it in 71. So yeah, but as I said, like seeing Yvonne win in 1980, I was just starting to play tennis and really getting into it. And I remember so specifically watching that final. And I just thought when Ash won her title, all I could think about was all of the kids that are aged 7 through 11 who will watch that victory, who will start playing tennis and pick the racket up. And so it's monumental in that respect for Aussies.
Yeah. Well, I thought the point that you were making about this sort of what the scheduling now requires of players is Ash doesn't get to go home and celebrate and be embraced and have a parade like we saw Matteo Berrettini enjoy with the Italian national soccer team.
Yeah.
Because she's going to be on the road for another, what, 6 weeks, 8 weeks?
Another, like, 120 days. It's rough.
It's brutal.
Look, she's obviously, I don't know where she is right now. I'm sure she's probably, knowing Ash, taken a couple of days off and gone and played, you know, 18 holes of golf every single day since she won. And then she goes to Tokyo for the Olympics, and then she stays on through the US Open. So it's a brutal... and I don't even know, will she stay on for Indian Wells? I'm not sure what that story is for Indian Wells yet, but it's tough. She became an icon in Australian sports. She was already very well known, obviously, but to win Wimbledon, that's a whole different kettle of fish, as we say in Australia.
Well, talk about that a little bit, because, you know, as you were telling Chris McKendry and I think it was Darren Cahill on the ESPN desk, Wimbledon for Australians is in some ways even more meaningful than the Australian Open. I don't know how that's true, but
yeah,
tell me what that means to Australians, that this would be an even bigger deal than if she had won the home slam.
Well, we'll wait and see if she wins the home slam, because that might be pretty special as well. But yeah, I mean, it's hard to describe it, but obviously winning the Australian Open is tremendously important, and you always want to do well in Australia. But there's something of the significance of winning at Wimbledon, because it was so unattainable in your mind, right? That you get up at 2 a.m, you watch the matches from Wimbledon on, you know, for me it was Channel 9, and that is like, that's Wimbledon. It's so big and grand and important. And then obviously to think about one day winning it, it's just in your own brain, it's unattainable. So,
well, you've won both, and it seems like as important as winning the Australian at home, which I think was your first slam, right?
Yeah,
your first slam was at home. It seems like Wimbledon looms larger in your imagination.
Yeah, obviously, look, I mean, when I won the Australian Open, it was my first Grand Slam, so it's hard to sort of separate the fact that it was my first Grand Slam win. So that felt so enormous and incredible, and the fact that I did it at home. But then the thought of actually winning a Wimbledon title, and then I won another one 3 years later in 2004, it was just, if I could ever pick one Grand Slam to win multiple times, Wimbledon was it. And I don't know why, Caitlin. I think because it was so foreign and so impressive and important to us. I don't remember getting up and watching the French Open. I don't really remember getting up too much and watching the US Open. I would, but every year you would watch Wimbledon. And I don't know why we put such a importance on it in Australia, but everybody knows Wimbledon.
I think it's the same here. I mean, I remember as a kid watching tennis. The first year I fell in love with tennis as a viewer was in 85 when Boris Becker won. And waking up early with my grandparents and hearing the NBC jingle and breakfast at Wimbledon, and the whole thing was so special. And yes, I remember spectating the other sports on TV too, but the other events on TV too, but Wimbledon, for whatever reason, felt like it was so elevated.
I don't know, maybe it's the Royals and the Royal Box and the whole, it's just everything about it. It's just a tournament that is more special in a lot of people's eyes than most. It's the one tournament you see every player taking a selfie on the court, going into center court and taking a photo. You notice that? Like every grand slam, the players, you'll get some random photos of whatever, but almost every player you see takes a photo or a selfie or an Instagram something at Wimbledon, whether it's Roger or, you know, Serena or whoever it is. It's just always more, I don't know why, it's just always more special.
Well, I have a really controversial idea coming out of this. Are you ready for it?
Okay, here we go. No grass.
No, I think we should make the US Open grass. Go back to the years when the US Open, before 1968.
It's never going to happen.
1967, because I think they had it on clay 1 year before they moved it to hard courts at the Billie Jean King National Tennis Center. Grass. Make the grass court season all summer long.
Listen, you and I would love to see grass every single tournament of the year, but it's never going to happen, so...
Well, why? Why? Explain why.
It's because it's where it is, and it's on hard court, and that's the way it is.
No.
That's, and I hate to... I don't,
that betrays a real lack of imagination.
Well, I'm sorry. It's the way it is.
Things are the way they are until they change, because somebody came up with a cooler idea, like mine, to have the the U.S. Open go back to grass courts. I think it could really work. I think it could make sense of an entire grass court season in the U.S. in the summer. It would make sense of something like the, you know, the Newport tournament that's happening right now, which happens after Wimbledon, even though it's on grass.
Wouldn't matter.
And then you have all these cool old clubs that used to be really, really amazing. Like you have the Longwood Cricket Club in Boston. You have Seabright in New Jersey. You have the Orange Lawn also in New Jersey. You could have the Philadelphia Cricket Club. You know, think about it.
Yeah, the East Coast Swing.
Yeah, the East Coast Swing. It could be a thing again.
Yeah. Thanks, but no, it's not going to happen.
Well,
anyway, let's talk about some storylines, though. Other than the fact that, you know, we did have an Aussie win, so I appreciate you starting the pot off by letting everybody know that.
Well, it's also, it was really meaningful.
Yeah,
she was the first seed. I think in the WTA these days, a first seed winning a tournament, much less a Grand Slam, feels like
upset.
A little bit of an upset.
Yeah.
And the fact that Ash Barty, nobody could look at that outcome and think she didn't deserve it.
Yeah.
She didn't play her guts out, but also her sort of, frankly, like stoic focus and at the end emotional sort of was cool. Like
I've never seen her do that. She won the French and we saw, obviously she was happy, but man, when she won the semi-final to be in the finals of Wimbledon, you could already see her emotion. And when I saw that after her win in the semi, I was like, oh boy, like that just showed me like how much, I mean, everybody we know wants to win, but that showed how important all of a sudden it was. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh God, is she going to get overwhelmed by that feeling in the final? And she did, obviously, in the second set, serving for the match.
Although credit to Plíšková. Oh, Plíšková really found some... Yes, Ash was leading and one could argue that she kind of wobbled a little bit trying to close it out, but Plíšková came up with the aces when she needed to. She came up with some incredible touch volleys. It's a reminder of how good her hands could be, even though not all of the volleys she closed on. Famously, there's that reaction shot where she kind of fails to keep moving forward in that backhand volley and beefs it. And then there's a reaction shot of Martina Navratilova and Billie Jean King in the audience with their heads in their hands thinking like, oh, in our day, we used to close the net. We used to finish volleys off.
That was the funniest reaction.
That was
I've
the
seen
best
part of the time. It was so great. But yeah, kudos to Carolina. She kind of has had a woeful year. I mean, for her standards.
I mean, she made the final at Rome.
But for her standards,
yes,
this has been a woeful year. She's been dropping in the ranking. She did make the finals of Rome, but lost 0-0. Like,
yeah.
Who loses 0-0 in a final? That just shows you how good Świątek is when she's on. But also, it's pretty disastrous. And her serve has been letting her down. So
yeah.
The fact that she found her serve at Wimbledon was good timing, we could say. But still, I'm still a little bit worried. The toss on her serve, to me, is too low and too far forward. And you can get away with it on grass. But on other surfaces, it's going to be a continued problem for her going forward. But she fought really hard in this tournament to get through the final and came, again, oh so close to winning a Grand Slam. That's two finals losses. But
I mean, I think for me, my takeaway is, you know, again, the women's tour gets dinged a lot for not having predictable storylines, which, again, that's if you like predictability, which I don't. I like chaos. However, for me, the two semis were great. All four players in the semis certainly deserve to be there. We had three people who had sat atop the number one rankings, two with prior slams, and one was the number two.
No, Angie Kerber.
Angie Kerber. I loved it. Like, it was so fun to watch two very, very hard-fought matches. You could see any combination of those four in the finals, and it felt like the two who made it deserved to be there, and then we got a great three-set match. So, like, that's a great, great outcome for me. That's a great tournament for the women, and I feel really happy, and I don't think a single player on the tour is not happy to see Ash Barty lift that trophy just because she seems so respected and well-liked.
Yeah.
And again, she came in as the number one seed and backed it up. So,
and I'll tell you, Caitlin, she was really close to not playing. I mean, her injury was quite significant.
Mm-hmm.
And she did not actually hit a serve from the moment she pulled out of the French Open to the Wednesday prior to Wimbledon. So for anyone who's sort of keeping tabs, that's a couple of weeks or 3 weeks, something like that, before she actually practiced her serve. And as you know, grass, you need your serve. And she needs her serve because it's like literally one of her two big weapons. It's mm-hmm. serve and forehand. So the fact that she was we hit with her a couple of days prior to the first round. And she was not serving great. You could tell that she was frustrated about it. We didn't really know why.
You mean you and Sam.
Me and Sam. We didn't really know why, but we kind of took a guess that maybe that's why. But you could tell she was stressed out, and then she obviously had that three-set match to start the tournament against Carla Suarez Navarro. And, you know, she said she pulled up really sore after the first round because she hadn't done the training that she needed to because of the hip. And so the fact that she was able to, like, win ugly for the first couple of matches and then found her form towards the end is just testament to, you know, her and her team and Mel Omazzolo, I give her props because she's the physio. The first person we saw her hug in the box after the match was her physio who works for Tennis Australia. So, yeah, it was a team effort to get her to the through a couple matches, and then she found her way on her own on the court. And so I just want a huge, huge congratulations to Ash. But we had some great storylines. We had Emma Raducanu, what happened to her, obviously, with the... it looked like a bit of a panic attack, and she admitted it the next day. It was all a little bit overwhelming. I felt badly for John McEnroe. He said a couple of things on BBC, and I think,
you know, John McEnroe
got blown out of proportion.
John can say some off the cuff stuff, and I don't love the way he mispronounces players' names, and he doesn't seem to want to do the prep. That said, I didn't find his comments about Emma Raducanu particularly egregious. I mean,
no.
He just sort of... I mean, yeah, he kind of made it all about
John
himself.
John was being John because
but he was also sort of trying to, I think, in his way, empathize. Like, yeah, it's tough. Like, you get overwhelmed.
Yeah, I enjoyed that he said, you know, when I was 18, I made the semis and I'm glad I didn't win because it was a lot. And
yeah.
I went to university and da-da-da-da-da. So I kind of... I was interested in how he put it. I think he started out by saying something about that... that Ila Tomljanović wouldn't care less if this girl, what was going on with her. So I think he got off on the wrong foot there. So people were a little bit like, what? But yeah, subsequently after that, what he said was actually correct. So,
yeah.
But a great storyline.
Totally.
Nice to see an English player get to the second week of Wimbledon. It's always great, especially after poor old Joe Konta had to play with
that was so brutal because I feel like
she
Joe...
has it. She has it now.
She has it now. Yeah. And now she's skipping the Olympics because she's got COVID.
Yeah.
I thought she was... if not a favorite, then certainly a real contender because she won that grass court title and her game on grass is brutal. I mean, she's got low hard stroke. She's 5'11". Like, that's
when
a
she
couple
pulled
things
out,
go different. That's a whole different tournament.
When she pulled out, that was the section of Ash that Ash was in. And I thought, whoop, that just opened. I thought that was going to be the most competitive matchup for Ash going into, you know, latter part of the tournament was had to play Joe in the third round, I think it was. So yeah, that was a shame.
Well, you do hope that Joe Konta can sort of hopefully regain her health, regain her confidence after having won a grass court title and sort of look to next year and be like, look, when all pistons are firing, I'm a threat on this surface and, you know, hopefully have another crack at getting a good tournament at Wimbledon. Because I feel like she really deserved it. Like she's a nice kid. She's hardworking. Her game is great. And I feel like we haven't seen the total potential of Joe Konta.
Yeah.
You know, and also she's a Brit and winning at home is like something you always want to sort of root for.
We love having the Brits do well at Wimbledon because it just adds so much flavor to the tournament.
Yeah.
Obviously, Andy, what a great couple of matches he played.
Totally.
Oh my God. Like that guy is just so great to just watch compete, and the absolute failure to win that match up 5-love in the third set was so brutal.
That was tough to watch.
It was so tough to watch. I was sitting in the bubble with like every other player in the like area where we ate our food, which was kind of like a big cruise ship food hall, and everyone watching it on the big screens, and it was just like it was torture for everybody. They're like, put it away already. But so great to see him back and entertaining the crowds.
Yeah. I do want to mention before we talk about the men's, Dylan Alcott, your Australian.
He's going for a Grand Slam of his own.
This is in wheelchair men's singles. He is probably the best dressed man on the tour. I mean, this guy is an incredible fashion plate and he's having a great year. And I feel like he could credibly get a Grand Slam under his belt this year. Is that, you know, it feels realistic.
It's very, very probable.
Yeah.
I think it's as probable as Novak winning. It's actually probably better chance that Dylan's going to do it. But, and you know, and he's dating a sex therapist. I mean, this guy, he knows
Dylan's got life.
He's got
out.
It going on.
Yeah,
but,
he's got life.
But can I tell you, he works so hard. I was around him quite a lot with Sam leading up to the Australian Open last year. And so we were on the practice court at the same time. We're in the gym at the same time, or him in the gym, me just watching.
Yeah.
And oh my God, like the amount of work that these wheelchair athletes do is absolutely unbelievable, Caitlin. Like, you know, they're in the gym. They've got bands attached to them on their wheelchairs on the court. They're like doing this, like, you know, all the work that able-bodied tennis players do. It's just awesome. And I am so impressed with how good they are on the tennis court. I mean, he hits the absolute daylights out of the ball. So, yeah, so that's a great story for wheelchair tennis and for Dylan that he's going for. He's won 14 Grand Slams now, so he'll be going for his 15th at the French Open and possibly his own calendar Grand Slam. So good luck, Dylan.
And I was actually really excited to see South Africa had a finalist. Montjane, this woman who also is incredibly well-dressed. If you follow her on Instagram like I do, you'll see she's a major sneakerhead. Wow. She lost in the finals, I think, to Esther Vergeer, who's just like the Steffi Graf of women's wheelchair tennis.
Yeah.
Which, you know, just utter domination.
Domination.
But, you know, I feel like if you ever have a chance to go watch those matches, they're usually towards the end of the tournament because the draws are smaller. I've had incredibly humbling viewing experiences watching just how good the tennis is.
Yeah.
You know, and some cool results on the juniors. All of this is to say I'm avoiding talking about the men's final because I was so disappointed that hot beefcake Matteo Berrettini didn't make more of a...
Well, I think that, you know, the good thing is...
stab at it.
I think that he was very close, to be honest. I mean, he came out very nervous, which is totally understandable. But, you know, you've got to be in those moments sometimes and experience them before you can learn how to win them.
Yeah.
And he's also playing against arguably the greatest player of all time.
Yeah.
In Novak.
I mean, I think at this point we can say Novak is the men's greatest player of all time.
There's no doubt in my mind.
Even with the tied Grand Slams, which again, to me, is not necessarily the measure of greatness.
No, he's won it. He has a winning record
against
Roger.
He's got a head-to-head against all these guys. Yeah.
Yeah,
the only person he doesn't seem to have a winning head-to-head record against, I think it's Andy Roddick. I think like Leighton Hewitt
and Nick Kyrgios
who he's never taken a set against, which is one of my favorite stats in professional tennis.
It'd be nice to see Nick actually get his shit together and be healthy, like really healthy, and actually work out.
Somebody was like, who's the player you would take if you had to play for your life against Novak Djokovic? So if this player like absolutely had to win or you'd die, my pick would be Kyrgios.
Well, yeah, because he hasn't lost to him yet. So
exactly.
That's not a bad
pick. And I also think his chaotic energy on the court really disrupts a Novak type who is, you know, really resilient. I think you need just total chaos to disrupt
him. Who would the crown pull for? Because people either hate Novak or love him, and people either hate Nick or love him.
I don't know. I would love to see it. I would love to see what
Let's
kind of
pull
confused,
for that.
Confused crowd. All right, we're putting it into existence. U.S. Open matchup, Nick Kyrgios. I don't care what round it happens in.
Third round.
Nick Kyrgios. Get fit, get serious.
Nick, get fit.
Novak, don't deef yourself with throwing things around on the court. And let's have it out.
Let's
see who the crowd
it.
Actually pulls for.
Let's
in a
manifest it.
Manifestation of these two players. Because
yeah.
I would love to see them do it in Grand Slams. Because Nick has a 2-0 record against Novak, but it's never been at a slam. It's best of three sets.
I also want to see a rematch of Ila Tomljanovic and Ostapenko. That would be really fun.
Oh my god, Ostapenko. Okay. Well, I think our commentary about that got a lot of, frankly, positive feedback, just because I think, you know, people like to understand the dramatics of what happens. And the truth is, there are a few players, I would say probably equally on the women's and men's tour. I mean, if you look at Benoit Paire's existential performance art going on yesterday in Hamburg, the saga continues. So I don't want to put this all on the women for being dramatic, because there's plenty of drama.
Benoit takes the cake for
Benoit's the most dramatic tennis player, full stop.
Of all time.
Of all time, probably. But, you know, between... when you look at the court and you see Ostapenko, or you see, like, Putin Seva, a.k.a. Poots, on the court, like, you know you're going to get some shenanigans. As Sloane Stephens famously said about Yulia Putintseva, if it's not one scam, it's another. You know, like, it's all, like...
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You know, like, it's always going down.
Well, yeah. Yeah, I put those guys in the same category there. So, So yeah, I want that manifested. I don't think Isla will, but
probably not.
But,
I can't imagine.
She had a great tournament as well, quarterfinals of Wimbledon. So yeah, some of the storylines were really fun. I just felt like it was a really fun tournament, and the women's doubles final. Talk about drama!
Yeah.
Oh my god!
Oh, yeah.
One server, one they had match point.
Yeah, match points on both sides.
I mean, Vesnina and Kudermetova were surviving in every match. They were down 7 match points prior to getting to the final.
Wow.
They were down 4 in the quarters and 3 in the semis.
That's nuts.
They should never have won that semifinal match.
Yeah.
And Elena actually told me after the match, yeah, we definitely should not have won, but I sensed that they were getting nervous because they'd never been there, and that's what experience is all about.
Yeah, for sure.
You know? And then subsequently, they have 2 match points in the next match and lose. And I kind of said that. I said, I think they've run out of lives.
Yeah.
This is it, you know?
Mm, yeah. Luck can only take you so far.
But it was packed and it was so entertaining. And
well, that's what you get with Chase
Yue, is up the net, like just running and making these great reflexes. And
listen,
Mertens just herself. Just
and what a cool
no pulse
things. Mertens is cold as ice, man. She is. She's gonna like walk away with the Olympic gold medal. You know that's gonna happen, right?
Yeah,
like all these like
singles.
all these high profile players are dropping out left and right. It's gonna be like Elisa Mertens just kind of just flying under the radar, getting Belgium a gold medal in the Olympics. Who is gonna win it on the men's side? I have no idea because
it seems like almost nobody's playing. If not Nick's not playing.
Novak's not playing.
No, Novak hasn't pulled out yet.
Didn't he say he's not playing?
He's 50-50.
Okay.
Which
well,
means,
if he's playing, he's going to win.
Yeah, if he plays, he'll probably
Unless he gets, like, some 3-set, you know, best of 3. Because if they play best of 3 in the Olympics,
hey, listen,
the finals.
Hey, listen, Tsitsipas would have won the French if it had been best of 3.
I know.
Anyway.
Well, enough. I have a whole spiel on that I'm going to save you from. But essentially, I feel like it could be exciting stuff going down at the Olympics. It's going to be fanless. The format's weird. It's going to be cool. I was talking
Watch it on NBC and listen to me at 2 in the morning, please.
Listen, I was talking to our good friend Carolyn Mano, who is covering the Olympics with you, and she was like, ah, man, I hope people still tune in. Like, I've seen a lot of, you know, negative coverage about this Olympics because obviously we're going to miss one of our most amazing athletes who legally smoked weed in a state where it was legal and then tested positive for marijuana after smoking everyone in a foot race. Like, listen, guys, I smoke weed once a year. I have a panic attack and stay up all night journaling about aliens. That's not a joke. That is literally what happens to me when I get stoned, which is why I do it so infrequently. If weed is not a performance enhancer, if this lady is getting baked on occasion because, like, God knows she deserves to, like, have whatever solace she needs in her life, and then she's still showing up and smoking people in a figurative sense, then let her go to the fucking Olympics.
If I smoked weed and tried to run 100 meters, I'd like take her on down like a pinball machine. It's like, bam, 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 my bad. I'm just trying to get to the finish line.
she's taking them out left and right. I feel like if you can do that while occasionally indulging in some weed, you deserve the gold medal already.
Weed, having weed as a performance-enhancing drug in the Olympics is such fucking bullshit, okay? And the reason they did, oh, it looks bad for the sport. Yeah, okay, I mean...
But it's legal in certain
parts of the world. So, like, enough is enough, anyway.
Also, the whole thing of the Olympics is watching the best athletes from every country compete against each other. And if you're going to sideline your best athletes for something dumb that your own rules are dumb about, then the joke's on you.
How funny would it be if the winner of the 100 meter women's like ran over the line and then stopped and like put her fingers between her lips
and just a little grass smoking
to you, baby?
Yeah, that's right. Hats off, guys. But I was talking about with our friend Carolyn Mano, who's going to be doing tennis with you, and she was like, man, I hope people tune in. I know the Olympics has gotten some, you know, dings, probably fairly, frankly, because it hasn't been handled well, and the IOC is famously corrupt. Like, there's a lot of issues. That said, the idea that you get, and I don't need to tell you because you've done it, to go
wait
the Olympics, duckweed. The idea that you get to go to the Olympics, convening among the world's greatest athletes, put a flag on your back and march, just that alone is so cool.
It is.
It went so cool.
And it would meant to me as much to me as anything I've ever done in my career.
Like, if you were to tell me I could have a Grand Slam trophy or a gold medal, I would take the gold medal every time. And I don't even know which country I would represent because I'm a dual citizen. But the point is, the Olympics are fucking cool. I don't care what anybody says about them. I prefer the winter to the summer.
That proves that you're a Canadian.
Controversial opinion. Yeah. Maybe. But my point is, the Olympics are cool and I hope people turn in because
you win more.
Well,
Yeah,
maybe. But also, I feel like the Olympics, you know, it's meaningful to people. Like, we get cool, weird results. Like, Andy Murray won 2 gold medals. The Williams sisters have tons of gold medals. But somebody like Monica Puig showed up and
had an incredible tournament, played out of her mind, beat Kerber in the finals, and has a gold medal. Like, stuff can happen in a cool way.
Who's the guy in Masu?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Masu.
He won doubles and team and singles.
Team's coach.
Roger and, of course, Roger Stan and Stan winning the gold medal and then, like, going nuts and Roger making fire on his body. I mean, I remember those moments.
That's
so
the only gold medal Roger's going to get is a gold medal with Stan Wawrinka. And I'm sure he wouldn't trade it for many, many things, right?
No. And, I mean, to see Novak walk off the courts, I believe in Rio, crying. Yeah. Like, it's so meaningful to play for your country. It's the most nervous I've ever been was playing for my country in Australia during the Sydney Olympics. My arms didn't stop shaking until I was up a set 6-1, 5-1 on my opponents. I was like, okay, I think I can start to breathe now. I mean, that's how nervous I was.
So
it means a lot to tennis players. So I hope that, we still get the great matches. And ironically, I think the Olympics provides unbelievable matches.
Agreed.
Throughout. So hopefully we'll still get that. And I'm sure we will.
Listen, for me, and again, I like to watch tennis for the chaos. I like the unpredictability. I like the fact that somebody can come out of nowhere. I like that. Look, if you are, call it, I don't know, Algeria's number one tennis player, maybe your ranking is not high enough so that you can qualify direct entry into any Grand Slam.
Yeah.
Or frankly, probably most tournaments. So the idea of somebody like me watching you play tennis is slim. However, if Algeria decides to send...
Well, you have to have a certain ranking. You can't just be random.
You can't just be like...
Yeah, you still have to qualify.
I couldn't like show up as like a new country that I invented.
No. You still got it. You still have to...
There's minimums.
Yes, there has to be... You have to have a certain ranking to get in, and then dependent on, you know, how many people they allow into the draw from a certain country, depending on how many are in a certain ranking base. So, yeah, you can't just turn up from some random country that you're not ranked. So sorry to spoil your...
Oh, because my whole plan of getting obscenely rich and buying my own island and calling it its own nation and then getting to participate in the Olympics. I mean, I would lose in the first round, to be clear. Probably wouldn't get a point. But my point is I could just go to the opening ceremonies and wear, you know, some kind of...
You just want free shit from your... Yeah.
No, I want to walk in the opening ceremonies. The opening ceremonies are amazing.
Yes, I know.
Amazing. My father played in one.
Oh, really? Which one?
The Atlanta Olympics.
Oh, I was playing. I heard your dad play.
You heard my dad do a trumpet solo in front of the stadium as part of the Atlanta Symphony, which is where he was performing at the time.
I was there for that games.
That was a cool...
It was my first Olympic games.
That was the centennial.
Yes.
Of the...
It was.
Revival of...
And it was hot as balls in Atlanta.
Well, Atlanta in late July.
Not good.
Swamp.
No, swamp.
Swamp. And who ended up winning that year? Capriati, right?
Capriati
win Barcelona? Who won 96?
No, Capriati won Barcelona and Lindsay won
Atlanta. And then Andre.
Lindsay and Andre, I believe, won.
Yeah, that was...
I should know that, but...
Yeah.
I had my,
I was going to say, what happened
to doubles? Situation. I couldn't walk on the doubles court, remember? Yeah. Rushed to the hospital.
Well, for anybody who wants to understand that reference...
Gotta go back.
Go back and listen to the archive, because your period can take you down when you least expect it.
Yeah. Dick kicks.
Yeah. I feel like the last thing we should talk about, because I always get, anytime I talk about Novak Djokovic or don't talk about him, I get a lot of hate from people on the internet who are like, what? No congratulations to Novak? Like, I'm sitting here congratulating
we're getting there.
Rafa or Roger on their 20th Grand Slams. I just don't care about the big three and I think they're boring and I want them to retire. Not because I hate them.
You did say that to me.
It's boring. Like, if it's not abundantly clear, I'm ready for... Like, I get
new faces.
I don't go to a restaurant and order the same dish. Like, I'm, you know.
I do sometimes.
You gotta keep it mixing
Carbone?
It up.
Carbone? Come on, you gotta have that.
I mean, the spicy rigatoni, sure. But my point is, they're too good, it's boring. So for me, like, great job, Novak. You won another tournament. Number one seed defends number one title, defends his, you know, championship from the year before. Not unexpected. The fact that Chapo got two sets off of him in the prior rounds, the fact that Berrettini got a set off of him
one day.
He will, for sure. And Chapo, frankly, played better against Novak than Matteo Berrettini played against Novak. Like, not only because he got two sets, but you could see Chapo was kind of like what you were saying, on the verge of figuring it out, like what it takes to play at that stage.
He just emotionally needs more time.
Yeah. Well,
he's got so many shots. He's the type of person, I say this all the time, when you have a good all-court game, well, I mean, he has weapons, he's not really considered an all-court player, but he can do everything.
Yeah.
When you have that type of a player, it takes longer to develop your game emotionally and mentally. And so for me,
so many options.
It's so obvious that he just needs one or two more years. I mean, look how great he was a couple of years ago, but but he just couldn't pull it together a little bit more this time. He's getting even closer. And I just think it's a matter of maybe, I'll say 3 years, he could win Wimbledon for sure in the next 3 years.
Yeah, he's got all the tools.
Yeah. I'd love to see him play Berrettini in the final.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah.
It'd be great. And then my guy Steph, let's see if he can.
Oh, yeah. And Steph, well, he was horrendous in the first round. But
I mean, I feel like that's such an emotional letdown from the French Open, especially because they were closer than ever from, you know, this year because the French was delayed a little bit. The idea of going out and losing a heartbreaking five-set final in the French Open and then turning around and having a grass court season is probably just like, I can imagine why, especially as a young kid,
and
you'd be
Tiafoe,
like, nah.
Obviously, to his credit, is such a great, exciting player on grass. Yeah. So, and he loves the big spotlight. As he said, if this had been on a different court, I probably wouldn't have won.
I love that guy.
I love that he, you know, said that. He was walking around the hotel that night and like he was just the man and he loved it. And I love, because I love him. I just think he's such a great personality for tennis. But on Novak, kudos, because the guy just knows how to win the big points.
Yep.
And, you know, I think the reason he doesn't get a lot of love as well is because, you know, he doesn't look as pretty as Roger.
In terms of the game style?
In terms of the game style, some people might say his looks. They might look at Roger and be like, look at him. It's like put on a GQ suit and off he goes. Yeah. You know, and he carries himself a little bit differently.
I mean, I will say this objectively. Novak is more handsome than Roger.
Good for you. A lot of people will disagree.
I know. I think a lot of people will disagree.
Some people will agree. So there you go. But Rafa, it kind of comes out with that attitude and that, like the bull, you know?
Yeah, I think it's hard to appreciate what Novak does incredibly well, especially if you're not a very, very close watcher of tennis, which is he turns defense into offense in a lightning flash. But because a lot of times he's playing defense, which, to be clear, is incredibly hard to do.
But even his winners, Caitlin, like even his winners, like Rafa's so obvious when he rips that forehand. It's like, hey-yah, you know, with the grunt and the whole thing. And then Roger's just so seamless the way he does it. And then Rafa's in the... Novak's kind of in the middle. Mm-hmm. He kind of doesn't look like he's really trying that hard. Kind of doesn't look like he's putting that much effort into it. And then all of a sudden the ball's like, it's a winner.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? It's kind of like, or he doesn't miss and he puts you into such precarious situations. Yeah. And his ability to get the ball back. I mean, dude, that one point that he played against Berrettini when Berrettini had an opportunity to break back in, I believe, the fourth set. And he slid and got this one backhand back in the court. And then he ran up for that drop shot and he hit that angle. It's like he just, he's kind of like an assassin where he just slowly puts the knife in really slowly and then just kind of slowly starts pushing it in. And then right at the end, he just slices your neck. And then boom, it's over. And you go, how did that happen?
Well, I think what's so interesting about this time period is everybody expects, and I think now we will certainly see him surpassing Steffi
he's
Graf.
He's going to get 25, I reckon.
He'll surpass Steffi Graf at 22. He'll probably surpass Serena at 23. I don't mention that other person's record because it's bogus.
I think he's going to end up with 25.
So it seems clear, you know, by Grand Slam count, he'll have the total for sure. But I also think it's a really interesting moment because now at this point, he's...
People think he's going to have more than that.
It's possible, certainly. But I think the real question is, so Rafa and Roger cannot threaten him anymore.
No.
It's just their head-to-heads, especially in the last decade, have been pretty dismal. The last stand really was Rafa on clay at Roland Garros.
And that went down.
So that they're done. They're not challenging. What really needs to happen, and you just said something really interesting that I want to make the point of, which is why Novak is so good, is the young guys, Tsitsipas, Chapo, Mateo, whoever, have to win the point so many times against Novak because he's such an incredible defender, and then he can turn that offense on in a second, and you don't even realize how good what he's doing is because it's not very showy. They have to grow up to be able to challenge him. They have to understand that in that match, at that level, you have to win the point 4, 5, 6 times. And I think they will get there, but the gap between when they can get there, you said Chapo is going to be winning it in 2-3 years, maybe Mateo, give him another 2 years. Team almost there.
Team's got to find his friggin' ass
right now. Team's in the bit in the wilderness at the moment, but, you know, he has won a Grand Slam, and he has challenged the greats in Grand Slam finals. Tsitsipas, like, I think these guys will get there so that they can solve Novak, but I think the gap between when they get there and now is going to mean that Novak's going to run the table and basically get every slam until they do.
It's sort of like the way Novak was on the precipice often against Rafa and Roger early in his career.
Yeah.
Like, it was a matter of time.
Yeah.
And then once time came, it's just like, then he just got better at everything. He got better, his forehand got better, his serve got better.
His fitness got better, his mental
Well, his fitness and all of it. Also, he wasn't dying in, like, the heat because he figured out whatever it was that he needed to figure out. And so yeah, it's just a matter of time. I just think that he is just such a professional and he just doesn't miss. Under pressure, he just doesn't miss. And he knows that these guys have to come up with something special over three total sets to beat him in a Grand Slam, and
it kind of reminds
me. He's just in that mode of like, I'm not losing to you anymore. Yeah. I'm not losing at all anymore.
Well, it sort of reminds me of that period, kind of after Capriati, Henin, Clijsters, Lina retired, and kind of before the next gen of women really stood up and started claiming stuff.
Yeah.
Where Serena just ran the table, and you got the sense that they were defeated before they went on the court because they knew, just like Novak, even though their games are not very similar, Serena was never out of it. You could maybe take a set because sometimes she's a slow starter, but at the end of the day, she's going to solve you, and you have to have the greatest day of your life on the tennis court, which is kind of how it feels like people going up against Novak.
Oh, yeah.
Have to think about it. They have to have their greatest day, and then they still have to hope that Novak has a not great day.
When he lost, when he beat Rafa at the French, I said he's going to win the Grand Slam.
Yeah, it seems like
after he won that match, I said that's it. He's going to win the Grand Slam. And so he's three quarters of the way there. If he plays the Olympics, you know, we'll see what happens.
I mean, I hope...
I'd like to see him play it just because I think the storyline going into the US Open with a gold medal to match Steffi Graf's in 88 would be...
Steffi Graf, that's the only record in tennis that I hope never goes away because I love Steffi so much.
Well, it's got a possibility of going away this year.
Yeah, I know. That's why I feel very ambivalent about it.
Now, more importantly, we're going into the summer here. We're going to have... full stadium, and trust me, when I was at Wimbledon, we had full stadium the last couple of days of Wimbledon. It was so great to have the crowds back. We're going to have a full stadium at the US Open. We're going to have full crowds. I cannot wait to, I mean, after last year's cavernous nightmare at the US Open with no fans and us sitting out in the ESPN desk talking to ourselves with like pigeons and like whatever the hell bird would fly behind us. I mean, there's nobody there. It was so hard. It was so hard to be there for it. I'm pumped. I'm pumped for the fans to be back. I can't wait for the summer of tennis here in the US. And the US Open's going to be raging. It's going to be so awesome. And yeah, I can't wait. And I think we'll see what happens with Naomi Osaka coming back through the summer. She certainly goes into the US Open with a lot of eyes going to be on her through the summer on hard court. We'll see who can come out on top in the women's game this year at the end of... the year at number one with Naomi and Ash sort of vying for that position.
I don't know.
Krejcikova. What about Krejcikova? Like, we haven't even talked about her. Like, after the French, you know, how's her rest of the year going to go?
Sabalenka. That's who I'm interested in.
Sabalenka is a huge, huge, huge threat. And
a lot of people
I'll
say
it right now. She is my favorite possibly to win. No, let me say that again. I think she's going to win the US Open this year. I think that
I do too, actually.
I think she will break through at the US Open. It's perfect for her.
Yeah.
It's crazy. The crowd are going to be
there. She loves it.
She now knows what it's like to make a semi of a Grand Slam, which is an enormous mental hurdle for her that she got through at the US at Wimbledon. And she knows how good she can be on hard court.
I think she is
my favorite, actually.
100%. I'm glad you mentioned that because I think for a lot of people, myself included, watching her three-set battle with Naomi Osaka in 2018...
Oh, it's the best match.
It was the best match of the tournament. Well, and I think I got the sense, truly, and I'm not like a predictor type, but I got the sense, truly, like whoever wins this match is going to win this tournament. Yeah. It was so seismic watching those two players play together. And, you know, it went three. Sabalenka had some chances in the third set, was, I think, up. Serving her serve kind of let her down. Like those that
she wasn't emotionally ready. Or you would say the same thing about Naomi, but Naomi stays so calm.
Yeah.
Was
Naomi can be ice cold, as we certainly saw later on in that final with all the stuff going on with Serena. Like Naomi can go to a very serene place, and I don't know that Sabalenka has that gear.
Which
but
it's funny considering what's happened over the last couple of months with Naomi off the court.
Sure.
That's the reason. She can go on the court, shut it down. I mean, Steffi was the same.
Yeah.
Monica Seles, the same.
Yeah.
They really could shut anything off on the tennis court and go and play. But off the court, the social anxiety and the press conferences.
Yeah,
and,
I get it.
You know, answering and asking, getting asked questions. They just were, the three of them were so shy socially. It's just why you don't see Steffi and Monica like out and about, like doing stuff in the media.
Yeah, I'm sure they don't miss
that. They don't like it, you know. Naomi's been able to control her narrative, whether it be, you know, with your magazine, obviously with Racquet magazine and being the guest editor, that's been in the works for how long? How long has that been in the works?
A year.
So, I mean, that's a year. That's not like, hey, you want to do this now that you've told the world you don't want to have anything to do with press? So, you know, that was a year in development. And then obviously the Netflix thing, again, everyone's like, oh, you know, she's controlling the narrative of that. There are, the cameras around her are often the ones that she is holding.
Well, I have a whole lot of thoughts on this, obviously, and I'm happy to tell everybody more about the Naomi guest edited issue, because I think it's probably a little different than what people are thinking. But let's save it.
Let's save that.
Because I think it is coming out, obviously, in 3 weeks. Or actually,
what do you mean I think. You know, you're the freaking editor.
Well,
man.
We're sending it to the printer, and there's always a couple of days when we don't know exactly which day we're going to be on press.
In other words, we're going to do
we're going to do a whole episode
on this in a couple of weeks. But
my hope is we can get some of the amazing guests who are in the magazine to be involved in that conversation, because there's some really, really cool creative people who we were able to get because they love and admire Naomi and they wanted to be involved in her world. So that's sort of a teaser preview, but I feel like we've done a good job of not only sort of wrapping up what was most exciting about Wimbledon, but also
looking ahead,
because the Olympics and the US Open are on the horizon. The Golden Slam maybe is up for grabs. Steffi Graf's 1988 record, who knows if Novak can go after it, but obviously he's the only person in position to do it.
I think it's going to be the hardest one for him to win, actually, because it is over three sets and someone can catch fire for two sets. So we'll see. But he hasn't said he's going yet. So by the time this pod comes out, he could be out of the tournament. But anyway, everybody, thanks for like hanging in with us during the racket sort of up and downs during the slams, me being busy coaching and ESPN, Caitlin's running a friggin' magazine, and we try and get together and do these things when we can.
Well, it's nice to do this in person.
We're in my apartment and we're doing it here. So Caitlin, thanks for a little wrap up. I can't wait for the hardcourt season now.
We're almost there.
Yep.
All right, my friend. Until soon.
Bye.
And that's it for this episode of the Racket Magazine podcast. Thanks for listening. Our host is Renee Stubbs. Our co-host and producer is me, Caitlin Thompson. Music by internationally renowned DJ Stretch Armstrong. Thanks to Tim Rogerian and the team at Acast. Find us at racketmag.com/podcast and subscribe to us at any of your favorite podcatchers.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.